A Republican for the Nobel Peace Prize? This is Jim DeBacchus on the left.
Mr. Noel, Mr. Hughes goes to Washington? This is Dan McKay on the right.
Is Trump using the art of the deal to set up Mitt Romney? I'm Natalie Gochner in the Political Center. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. But first, this news. Good morning. I am Natalie Gochner, and this is Both Sides of the Aisle. I represent the Political Center, and I get to hang out with the political left and the political right. In the studio, on the left, Senator Jim DeBacchus.
Natalie, you know what? If it wasn't such a horrendous time, I would be all excited because there's so much to talk about.
There is. And Dan McKay, Representative Dan McKay, on the right.
Hi, Natalie. This is going to keep it low, right?
We are popping today in the studio, and I don't know what it is. Maybe it's the Trump cabinet picks. Maybe it's the snow on the ground, the holiday season. We're letting loose or something, but we have a good
Jim lit
for
the
today.
Studio on fire a minute ago, and you guys don't get, you know, hopefully we can recreate the fervor, but Jim just gets some excitement, and I just, anyways. Sometimes I get into a show, and we do some little show prep, and it's just like pulling the ripcord and just waiting to see what Jim does, so that's what we get today.
So the ripcord's pulled, and we want to talk about President-elect Donald Trump's cabinet picks. And we're getting news, you know, we've got the new transportation secretary nominee in Elaine Chao, used to be over at Energy, wife of Mitch McConnell. We have the Treasury, I guess, picked Steve Mnuchin. Nobody can say his last name.
Munchausen.
And then we have Health and Human Services, a department that I served in, and Tom Price, a congressman from Georgia, who's a physician, and I think he's chair of the House Budget Committee, a very strong opponent of the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare. Lots of changes going on.
Yeah, don't you think just with some of these changes, okay, I'm not going to I'll start at the bottom, right? So with HHS, mm-hmm. Don't you think by picking an absolute opponent to Obamacare, there's already a signal of what's going to happen in the first 30 days?
Yeah. Well, I'm predicting it will be repeal and delay.
Oh, interesting.
You know that term. So the idea is repeal it because that was the campaign promise. They got to do it. Delay means to delay the implementation so they have time to figure it out because they can't just pull the rug out.
Yeah.
Now, Jim, I so want to hear your comments, but I want to just set it up by saying I worked at HHS. They have something like 78,000 employees there. It has the FDA, the CDC, the National Institutes of Health, Medicare, Medicaid. It's the largest federal agency. While I was there, its budget surpassed the GDP of Italy. This is what Tom Price is walking into. And there's a famous Russian quote that you'll appreciate with all your Russian background where a Russian czar said, I don't rule Russia, 10,000 clerks do. So I'm setting up the career service employees that are going to have to carry the federal government as you get these cabinet picks either that don't have experience or that have such a tough job to do.
You mean the basket of deplorables that Trump is picking to surround himself? Look, the only hope for Donald Trump was you can be a little snoozy, a little whatever like Ronald Reagan was. But if you pick smart people, you can get through just fine. He's picked loopy people. And
hey, Elaine Chao's not loopy.
Okay, but she's
say, there's
not
no
exactly
more strategic
a fresh
pick
face.
When you're trying to deal with transportation issues than picking up the wife of the Senate Majority Leader, right?
Yeah, that's draining the swamp, isn't it? getting rid of things.
Hey, but so like the HHS pick, he's a physician. He knows the budget. He's been an opponent of Obamacare. The public voted. We picked our president.
The majority didn't pick, let me point out. But
that's not how the system works, and both candidates knew that. And none of them were trying. They were all trying to win the Electoral College because that's how you win.
I agree. Okay. I agree. But I am saying if you win by a minority of the voters— Yeah. You ought to be moving toward the middle, not to the extremes. You ought to be moving toward technocrats that can get your policy done, not to idiotic ideologues as you are. And that's, unfortunately, the direction that President-elect Trump has gone.
Dan, this is part of my point, though, that there's all these career service employees that actually know how to run the federal government.
Yeah.
Many of them are extreme professionals in the senior executive service. I mean, they're high quality people. I realize there's some, you know, problems and some waste and things, but I think we're going to be okay.
You know, I think of it like a Trump ship, Like a Trump cruise ship.
Titanic? Or?
No. I'd probably go with like Carnival Magic or something.
It's going to go bankrupt soon.
It's a carnival.
It's,
okay.
Like, it's like a nice carnival ship, right? It's kind of not the highest end deal, yeah. Right? It's not a princess or whatever. But the captain always gets a ton of props for being the guy that leaves his phone on, Jim.
It's gone. He got it.
Steven, I'm busy. I'll call you back.
So the captain always gets tons of props from everybody, you know, in the dining hall, all these things. They always make a big deal out of the captain. But everybody knows he's not doing anything. He's wearing a fancy uniform and everybody else is doing all the work, to your point.
Yeah.
And I think at the end of the day, you're going to see a steady hand on the ship, even though the one that's – they may have a fake steering wheel set up for Donald.
I'm a tad nervous about it, but I, you know, I'm okay. I'm really interested to see what happens with Governor Romney. And, you know, he has his second visit this week. What is going on? Your prediction's nothing.
I think nothing.
You think he's going to be toasted by this president-elect?
No, I just think
Romney's too smart to let that happen, isn't he?
Yeah, I think – I don't know. Huh. It's not that he's too smart. It's that he doesn't have the same – he's not in the same position, mm-hmm. right? It's not like he gets to get revenge. It's not like he gets to walk away with this,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
He goes and does – I think Romney is being a true patriot, in my opinion. The president calls. He wants to meet with you. You go and meet with him, mm-hmm. right? I don't know that Romney is necessarily waving his hands and requesting anything. I think he's just answering the call. That's really all it is, and I think nothing comes of it.
Jim, what do you make of Kellyanne Conway, the campaign manager for the Trump campaign, just roasting Romney?
The audience needs to understand that Natalie here really knows what she's talking about. She went to Washington. She lived there. She was the head honcho at EPA and HHS. She told Mike Leavitt what to do when he was a cabinet secretary. She did stuff. So my question is coming back to you. When in the history of the presidency have you had a senior advisor go on television while an important decision was being debated and take sides so adamantly? And I'm talking about the decision on Secretary of State as it's Romney versus
Petraeus.
And the guy they're really talking about is Giuliani.
Yeah.
So this senior advisor, maybe the number one advisor really, is screaming, you shouldn't take Mitt Romney, blah, 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 blah. He was disloyal. Is there any way? How can that happen?
Yeah. Well, the way I would see it is that this is the 3 a.m. tweet phenomenon. This is the president-elect saying to his loyal campaign manager, I want you to go on the Sunday shows and I want you to kind of express this opinion. It'll be attractive to my base and people that voted for me. And let's see how Romney responds.
Oh,
and let's see how the trial air balloon works. I mean, I think this is just Romney doing the art of the deal. And I don't
you
know why.
Trump.
Sorry, Trump doing the art of the deal. And I don't know why I relate it to the 3 a.m. tweets, but I'm saying this is both predictable and unpredictable at the same time.
Interesting.
Yeah.
If there is nothing that is clear about Donald Trump, if nobody has figured this out about Trump, then they are totally missing it, which is that man loves theatrics.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And this just kind of – your theory potentially plays into this whole theatrics element, and that makes it more interesting.
Yeah, but I'm really hopeful that Romney gets a spot on that cabinet because I think he's an adult in the room, and I think it can only help. When push comes to shove, we need some people like Mitt Romney there.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Donald Trump.
I mean, when you look down at this list, Tom Price at HHS – you should see the things he's against that he wants to rip out. When you look at Michael Flynn, who's borderline personality, and he was fired for serious issues at NSA. The assistant at NSA is a person who is a commentator on Fox News who had real serious problems.
How about Steve Bannon?
Steve Bannon, the alt-right guy that's a senior. You talk about an education secretary that is an ideologue, that is a billionaire and knows nothing about education other than she hates the Federal Department of Education.
So Jim, if I understand you correctly, you would like to undo the presidential election. That's basically what you're saying. Because you do not obviously understand what the country told you and your party about its positions. Because if you're complaining about these things, you don't understand.
No, I think I understand. I don't think Trump understands. He doesn't have a Reagan mandate.
He doesn't need to.
Lots of energy in the studio. In our next segment, we'll think of some great local things to talk about. Stay tuned.
This is Jim DeBacchus on the left.
And Dan McKay on the right.
Natalie Gochner in the Political Center. And we are on both sides of the aisle, and we've been talking about the Trump transition, and we've got to move on to other topics. Before we do that, I just want to hear a little bit about Greg Hughes and Mike Noel. What are you guys thinking there? So Mike Noel, Dan, you tell us. What's going on in Mike Noel?
Okay.
A representative from Kane County.
Yeah, so representative from Kane County. He's has been behind the scenes kind of talking about, you know, being interested in the BLM job, Bureau of Land Management. And now, you know, he's made an official announcement that, you know, that there's paperwork going in and those kinds of, and he's under consideration for the head of BLM.
Wow.
Wow.
I think he fits right in with that cabinet.
They better get Bears Ayers declared very quickly.
Yeah, I was going to say, Mike, you know, Mike will be, if he is nothing else, he will be an ardent supporter of some of the hard rural issues that the rural part of the state has had to deal with and that the urban elite do not understand.
They used to have this joke that it was the Bureau of Livestock and Mining. And I think it would return to that under Mike Noel's watch.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's what he'd want to have happen.
Yeah.
What about Speaker Hughes? I mean, the Secretary of Transportation spot's taken. I think he should take and would be a great candidate for an assistant secretary position in transportation. Question is, will he get the offer? Would he do it?
You know, is it hard? I mean, Greg has a young family.
Yeah, it's really
and,
hard.
How do you pack up and move and get a home in Washington, or do you leave your family here and then commute, even if you're the Secretary of Transportation?
I mean, there are a lot of Democrats vacating their houses right now in D.C. There's going to be plenty of availability in the real estate market.
You know what I learned when I was in Washington? I learned how unfair it is that our nation's capital is in the District of Columbia. So let me give you the good example. So Christy Todd Whitman was EPA Secretary. Administrator right before we got there. So she had a lot of people from New Jersey there, and they stayed. And I watched how these people could go home, back and forth easily, you know, make the soccer games, keep their homes. And then there I was having to make that, you know, long flight back to Salt Lake City. And it made me realize how the nation's capital being in the East Coast is really a disadvantage to us. And
how often did you have to do that?
I worked with people who would red-eye from San Francisco every Sunday night to get to, you know, Washington at HHS. I was there a few years, but I had 9 months of it where I commuted. My family lived here. Terribly difficult time in my life.
Yeah, there was a time when, you know, I guess it's public that I looked at a congressional run.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the very same. It was that
dynamic
kind of equation, that commute that eventually, you know, turned
me off.
It keeps
good people in the West out of running.
That's why I'm not running.
Hey, let's just do a local political thing. John Huntsman Jr. has made a hint or suggested that he's open to running for Senator Hatch's seat in 2018. Oh, my. I think he could have it if he wanted it.
Not if he ran as an independent.
Okay.
And he says he wouldn't run as an independent.
Yeah, he said he'd run in the party.
As a Republican.
Yeah.
So he's got that, right? Mm-hmm. But remember, and it will depend on how much people remember. And I honestly, the electorate probably doesn't remember much, usually on these issues. But remember a few years ago when he was running against Mitt for the presidential nomination, he said some fairly, I won't say offensive, but he said some things that basically turned off the Mormon culture, I thought.
Sure.
That made him kind of look cool to
almost
them.
Almost it depends what is.
Yeah.
You know, in the Clinton world only. Am I Mormon? Well,
yeah.
It depends how you define Mormon.
And I enjoy my coffee. And I go, you know, I do these. So he did everything he could to distance himself from being Mormon. Mm-hmm. And now he wants to come back and run predominantly and you know, kind of recruit the predominant religion. I think that will be a bigger problem than John thinks it will be.
Yeah.
I don't know if that will stick around, but it'd be interesting.
Let's just hope that drinking coffee isn't a problem about running for Senate.
Right?
But
if that's the least you need to get your job done, I guess that's...
Your comment on Governor Huntsman.
You know, liberals loved Huntsman until it became just how obvious... He has more ambition than anything. I mean, to leave the governorship, to go pledge as he did and say, kiss Obama, then go to China, then come back and run against him. Yeah. It's kind of tacky. Yeah. And then he was among the first on the Trump bandwagon when he saw the wind shifting that way. He just – there doesn't seem to be any there. Mm-hmm. And I think the luster may be off.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Interesting is that the count my vote reforms will really help him if he chooses to run, because he can run as a Republican, be on the ballot as a Republican, and not have to go through the convention.
And his daddy bought the Tribune, which will be helpful if he runs. You know, we haven't had that happen since Senator Kearns secretly owned the Salt Lake Tribune while he was in the Senate. Nobody knew. I mean, it'll be interesting to see how the paper plays that.
Dan, I was happy to see that the voter participation numbers went up. That's a count my vote victory.
Is it?
I think so, because of engagement. You know, just more competitive elections. I mean, I realize like LeVar Christensen
this
wins.
This had everything to do with vote by mail.
Was it Suzanne?
We all knew that vote by mail was a vote by mail deal. You put a ballot in everybody's living room. Don't count my vote. I love the count my vote.
There's people
friends.
That wouldn't have been on the ballot that were. And so
no.
You had expanded choice.
Nobody was on that ballot from the Count My Vote proposition.
Okay.
Nobody.
Not Suzanne Harrison?
Not even Suzanne Harrison. Nobody was on there as a result of the count. They all made it through the caucus convention process. They were all the winners of the caucus convention process.
Yeah, so what I would say, they were on the primary.
They were, but
that
turnout was one of the state's worst.
Yeah. Ugh.
So while we had really, really competitive races at the primary, the competition that we thought we were creating by having more participants on the ballot didn't play out. But in November, when we had mail-in ballots for everything, everybody participated.
And I'm going to disagree, because everybody had more choice.
Okay.
We enabled more choice, and that gives you more engagement.
I'm down with that argument. You know, I just think for the cost of what we do, you know, I just look at the marginal utility of it, and I'm not sure it's there.
I love it when you use marginal analysis on this program. Jim, I know you're a big fan.
You're the only one.
I don't know what it means, so I'm just going to let it go.
Jim, I know you're a big fan of this recent study that came out from Utah Foundation about education funding.
Wow. This really hits home. I think this is the single most important study in a generation on anything in Utah, because it documents a lot of things about Utah education. We live in this kind of made-up fairyland that our first priority is education. That's where we're going. That's our fiber. And it's nonsense. Over a generation, perhaps the most startling statistic out of this study was, we always say, we have so many kids, we're doing the best we can. And for many years, Utah ranked number one for percentage of our state resources that went to education K-12. That is not true anymore. We've dropped to 37th place. Utah Cares, we're number one when it comes to building highways. And I can give you a lot of other things where we're number one or two or three or four. But with education, the legislature is going to have to look itself in the eye and say, we actually talk the talk, but we're not there.
Dan, put us in the Republican mindset up on Capitol Hill, because you've got this study, you've got, you know, education being a dominant and popular issue in the public. And you've got this group of business leaders who are pushing the 0.7% increase in the state income tax. And they want to put it on the ballot. And as I understand it, the legislature chose not to do that last year. Yeah. And so now they're going the route of the initiative.
Which is great.
What's it like in the mind of a Republican legislator who you know, who sees this data, who values education, values our kids, but the numbers are – there's some warning signs out there.
Politics is local, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So the people that vote for me, right, whether it's good, bad, or indifferent, whether that's good policy, bad policy, the people that elect me have been very ardent in saying no new taxes, right? Mm-hmm. And they read my lips, doesn't come, mm-hmm. but it's there. Mm-hmm. And they don't want a new tax, right?
Yeah.
And I think you look at the business leaders and their proposition, and they're doing the smart thing. Their marketing is a 0.7% increase, right? Mm-hmm. But if you are honest about it and you stop and think about it and realize the legislature, or this proposal will increase your taxes 20%. It is a 20% tax increase. So that may be a good thing. That may be a bad thing. This is a perfect issue for the public, because it seems the public wants
thought,
this.
I'm a conservative Republican, and I've always thought, some might say, well, you represent the political center. But fiscally, I'm a very conservative person. And the idea would be, why not? What's the problem with having, on a general tax increase, letting the voting public decide? And so, you know, put it on the ballot. But what I hate is that you guys make them go through this initiative stuff, and why don't you just put it on the ballot?
It's
you can do it just by passing a bill that puts it on the ballot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Save just all that money, all that time. Give
the voters who
choice.
Vote, all I can answer is the 175th, right? I'm 175th of the people, and I know that that fails big time in my district.
Yeah.
It just fails.
This is not a binary choice about raising your taxes 20% or having our kids fall off a cliff. I tell you, my stomach gets upset sitting in that rev and tax hearing, meeting after meeting, where corporation after corporation after corporation come in for tens of millions of dollars of tax cuts for nothing. They just make it up. Oh, this will be an incentive. There's $35 million. There's $50 million. Here's one guy in the northern part of the state whose buddy happens to be creating chain link fence outside of the United States before the committee. He comes and says, I don't think it's fair that I pay on my $10 million income state income tax for the education fund. And
wait. I don't think it's fair that I pay taxes on that $10 million in Canada and then also pay on it in Utah. Let's make sure it's fair.
There they go. There they go. Every Republican in the legislature voted, yep, let's give this guy $500,000 taxes. You know, we have a good system. We work with the federal. If the feds say we'll take a tax break on this or that, we accept it. Except in this case, we say the feds are wrong. We're going to make a special law for this one guy to give him $500,000 a year, take it out of the school fund, and every Republican is there. It's not binary. We ought to go back. We ought to look at those corporations, and we ought to stop all of this welfare. And I'll tell you, that's where most of this $1.2 billion a year went. It went from our school children right out of there to these fat cat corporations that have great lobbyists that are up there creating these scenarios, making a lot of money for themselves. It is a debacle.
Debacle.
Yes, debacle. It is.
So the biggest number in that report was $800 million that's going directly to higher ed. And that was a constitutional amendment that was done here in the state that allowed what I thought was bad fiscal management, candidly. Mm-hmm. I do not believe that $800 million on an annual basis should be leaving the state's education, the K-12 education system, and going into higher ed. And that $800 million is a big number. We used to fund it differently, and all that's done is allowed the general fund itself to be used for other things.
Like transportation,
yeah. Those kinds of things. And that kind of infrastructure is important as well, but trying to compete with all of those things at the same time, I just don't think we should have taken through the K-12. So that's my feel.
So here's an idea. Why don't we take all this energy and all this complexity and have a Blue Ribbon Commission help modernize our tax system and fix some of these problems. Take care of remote sales, add more stability by taking care of the food tax on the sales tax on food.
I'll tell you why, yeah. Natalie, honestly, because it's ginned up. The Republicans would appoint this commission, and like everything else in the state, they would pick people that have pretty much decided before they go in what's going to happen, and it would be for all the corporate and all the big funders. If we could actually get honest people that would sit down and talk about these things, but I have no faith in the system.
I was given a gift from my mother, and that is that I'm an optimist, and I believe in positivity, and I think you could do it.
Thank you, Natalie.
Well, I think you could put together the right people to put together the right data that would help this state make some reforms.
I might even invite DeBacchus to the committee now.
Hey, guys, we need to go to gripes. And Dan, I'm going to start with you just because I don't want Jim to like spoil everything with how gripey he feels today.
I know he is.
I can go first. I have one.
He's on fire.
You want to yield your time?
You go ahead and start.
Great guy Spencer Cox is. I mean, Trump is up in the middle of the night talking about fake elections and how everything is phony. Cox is the one guy, he stands up and says, Donald Trump, you're full of crap. Yeah. Our elections are not fraudulent. It is not dangerous. We have fair elections and tell the truth. Well, what kind of a Republican actually does that? My hat is off to you, Spencer Cox, whose political career is probably done forever. If you need to sell Russian art for a living, let me know.
Yeah. I commend him. I commend Lieutenant Governor Cox as well for a lot of things he stands up for.
And see, I thought at the end of the day it was hapless and lame. But
how about you, Dan? Do you have a gripe?
Yeah, you know, I'm going to gripe that Jim's gripes are always better than mine. I am not spending enough time complaining. And I have got to spend more time.
If you're a liberal in this state, you have a lot to gripe about. Yeah. Maybe that's not talent, it's just philosophy.
I am. I mean, as the weather turns, I know it's good for our state and good for the economy and all those things because we get snow up in the mountains. But my drive yesterday really stunk. So how superficial is my complaint?
This is related to my gripe. So it's the holiday season. You know, things change. The roads get more congested. It's hard to find parking. You go out to eat and there's a line. I don't like that.
Yeah.
I don't like that. So I want to give a challenge to our listeners to go home, light a fire, turn on
the jazz.
Yeah, turn.
No, don't do that.
Turn on the jazz and just enjoy the holiday season and don't get caught up in all the materialism and things. You've been listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. Been joined by Dan McKay and Jim DeBacchus. Programs produced by Ross Chambliss. Thanks for listening.